What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms. All right, welcome into See Ball, Get Ball. I'm your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins joining me as always. Brent, the pipes are a little bit weak.
Sounding a little off, honestly.
Yeah, the travel was interesting this week. My baby girl plays AAU basketball, so we got to go to College Station, which is always a fantastic place to visit. But going there was really fun. Y'all have probably experienced this before, but flight delayed. Get in at like 2 a.m. Texas time, which is early in the morning. Get into the rental car place. Get my rental car because I'm Emerald Club and go to drive out the gate and go to the destination. Man, it's going to be awesome. We'll get there about 4 something. Fine. Like sleep for 6 hours. Baby girl can go play basketball. We're there. The whole family's together because we waited for Nicholas to finish football practice. So we could all be together. Nobody working the gate. Drive up like closed. And I'm like, what?
They gave you a car.
Yes.
And the thing was locked so you couldn't get out of the parking lot.
Correct. So literally got my car. I drove around. And I asked the lady, I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, how do I get out? Like, it's closed by National. Can I go out another direction? She was like, no, but they'll be here at 4:45. I was like, awesome. Sounds great. So we went.
What a response, by the way.
Hey, me and Nicholas jumped in a couple of other cars. Another set of cars and slept next to Lindsay and Leah, who slept in another car, and then woke up 4:45, got to A&M College Station about 6:30 that morning. And then we took some naps, played some hoops, baby. It was the only time we get on an airplane for our AAU this year so far.
And which is good.
It was not great. It was not a great experience.
Not a great start. Not a great least travel weekend. We'll have the basketball go at least.
Basketball was solid. My baby girls team is really good. They're 15U team, but we played a team with the number one girl from Indiana, and we got slapped. Like, and Leah was my baby girl was so fantastic to be around that night. Didn't say a word the rest of the night. I was like, you good? Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. And then the next morning we woke up, and I started it just in Davey fashion, Brent, like I've had for all these years. I woke up the next morning. I was like, oh, it's a new day, baby. I was like, let's go. I was like, by the way, how's your butt? She's like, what do you mean? I was like, is your butt still sore from the belt you got last night? And she was like, you're going to start the day like that? Really? That's how amazing. We're going to start the day?
Amazing. Well, I mean, AAU basketball, how much do you travel over the summer? I haven't talked about that as much.
Yeah, we got one tournament in Ohio that we'll go to, but everything like Rock Hill, South Carolina is right down the road, which is beautiful where we play a lot of the tournaments. But that's not the reason everybody joined in to see ball, get ball. That's not why they're listening.
Probably like hearing it though, but probably not the reason they joined in.
Yeah. Well, now some people didn't take too kindly. You were sending me some messages. Some people didn't love our or they did like or didn't like the college football rules that we're trying to implement to change the game and make it better. By the way, Josh Pate will join us in 20 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes. He's so much fun to listen to. Interesting personality, but like one of the few dudes I think that just loves the game of college football like nobody's business. It's really, really fun to listen to him. So he'll join us in a little bit.
Yeah, so we've been looking at, okay, everybody, this is broken. What's some of our solutions? You posed one last week, having a sort of rookie salary cap in a way for the NIL. And there was a lot of positive feedback. I will say, in true Twitter fashion, somebody responded and said, this you, ? And it was a link to you agreeing to your contract with the Bengals.
Which is good. I like that. Oh, well, here again, the problem when you start talking about this is people think that you think that the players should not make money. That's not what I said. That's not what we believe. The players absolutely should make money. Everybody in this equation should make money. I just don't believe you should pick your destination, go to a school, and the reason you go to the school is because of money. I think there's like, let's find your fit. Let's make it uniform across the board where you only can get paid so much. And now you go to a place that I think you're truly going to be happy. And then there'll be less movement. And listen, if we can get to other rules too, and we'll slowly start to roll out our plans, because we've got other plans that we think can really change the sport and help the sport evolve and grow. Like, so be it. But I do think it would be important to make it where kids aren't going to school for money, to make it where there's a cap. Listen, now when you go to school and you go earn it, you make the NIL dollars. Like, you make the big money. You make the money that you've deserved and that you've earned when you get to college. But I think it makes the decision-making process for, and listen, my son's getting recruited, and I'm not sure at what level he's going to get recruited, but he's going to these different schools, and they're big schools. Like, I'm going to very much encourage my son not to look at the dollar signs. The dollar signs are awesome. Like, and that's great. And I want him to make money, but like, we're not trying to make money right now. Like, this is the biggest amount of money when we can make money in a lot of destinations. What's the best spot for you, man? What's the best spot where you can go have success, maximize your experience, your opportunity to get where you ultimately want to go? So sometimes you'll forfeit a little bit of money up front, maybe. Yeah. But like, I think if you're in the right position to succeed long term, I don't think you'll forfeit. So I'm not trying to take money away from players, Brent.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to take the decision-making process and making it about money and making it about where you want to go, where your fit is. And I think you'll have a better experience, better opportunity. And now you go make that cheddar when you have the opportunity with the NIL.
Yeah, and this kind of piggybacked off of Jackson Cantwell, who's number one recruit, his decision to at least commit. I don't know that it's at this point, nothing's final until they're actually at school, signed and in school, but to commit to Miami. And there was a lot of, you know, the $2 million-ish number thrown around. So that was kind of what was the basis of the conversation. Another interesting comment came from Bennett Tiger and the at Iron Man W Wu. So a little interesting name there. But anyway, his comment was, show progression towards a degree before majority of payment. And basically, what about, you know, 3-year deal with 4th-year option, stay in school for 3 years, things like that. And I think that's one element of it that is never talked about. And I wonder, but Saban, when he talks about this, is he very much talks about it in the sense of he wanted to make them better, set up for life kind of thing. And yeah. I think he very much cared about the academic side of it. And I wonder if this will ever, once the final version of whatever it is, the rules and things like this look like, that academics will actually be a part of this.
Brent, two things. Do you know what's happening right now across the country? And I don't. This is a fact. I've heard this from tons of coaches. Like, these kids are getting paid, which again is good. They're maximizing their opportunities. They're making money. You know what they're doing in school, Brent? They're paying people to do their work. 100%. Like, they're taking their money, which they're earning, and they can choose to spend their money they want. They pay to go get somebody to write their paper now. Like, they don't have to use AI, because AI will get them in trouble, obviously, and there's ways to fix that and correct that. But now they can go to another student who will make money and say, hey, will you write my paper for you? That's happening across the country. Like, here's another thing, too. I think we might need to reevaluate, Brent, these scholarships. If I'm paying you millions of dollars, why am I giving you a scholarship then? Like, pay for your school. Like, I think the education component of this, it's a joke, first of all. This is not what it's for. Like, this is not the system. The NCAA has sucked all along the way for a long time. Like, this is not new. But, like, when you're talking about education, which is, listen, we know the stats and the numbers. Not everybody's going to make it to that next level. Like, most are not. Obviously, a high click are not. So, you know, how do we continue to set these kids up for success? I would love to do something that I've said I've wanted to do for years. I would love for some of this money to go into trust, man, where you put it away for them. Like, it goes away until they get out of college, until they get to that, you know, age where they start. Listen, our frontal cortex lobe, whatever that garbage is, we ain't grown, okay? Like, if I could go back, there's so many stupid things you did and I did in college that we would love to fix. And when you give me money, I'd have been even stupider. Like, I'd have had so much more stuff, and I just would have wasted an opportunity that I feel like can be life-changing. So, like, the scholarships, the academic part of this is a joke. Like, there is no more academics part of this. This is semi-pro football. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. And that's And it's, like you said, it's the majority who aren't going to realize a professional football dream, that this is where you got to impact. And you think of a kid who's in four different schools in 4 years. It would be fascinating to see some statistics, and I haven't looked or seen in terms of graduation rates and whatnot of those kids with multiple transfers. Because for me, like, I think you should come, you should go for 2 years and stay at the same school. And then after that second football season, you couldn't have that one-time transfer. But then after that, you only transfer if you graduate. Like, I think because there is the component of that. We even did that, by the way, in our wills. Like, if we, Dean and I go away at any point in time, kids don't get money until they have a degree or they reach a certain age.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, go take care of your business first before getting the money.
We've seen what happens as a society when you give kids money. Like, when you give young people money, it's not going to end well. Like, we don't know enough about what we don't know. And you will, and you'll grow, and you'll learn. And listen, you're going to make mistakes and along the way, but it's just – again, we're trying to find the best system to put these kids in the best chance to succeed. Like, that's, I don't have a care in the world about any of this crap. Like, I don't care where the money goes. I just want these kids to be able to take this money and use it for their future and to benefit them greatly. And if you put a cap on where you're going to school as a rookie salary cap, now we've chosen an opportunity to be successful for us. That's the best. And, you know, we should get Josh Pate's take on this. I mean, because he's first of all, a couple of things that I love about Josh Pate. Y'all's hair looks strikingly familiar, by the way.
Hey, it's perfect.
A couple things I love is college football junkie, absolute junkie for sure. Storm chaser, which is fascinating to me, and he's got the shirt on. Look at that! Like, one of the best at what he does. Man, where are you at right now?
David, where does it look like I'm at? Before I tell you where I am at, just by the context clues, where would you think I am? Look at the artwork.
I have a guess.
Okay, Josh, this is see ball, get ball, because I've been hitting the head a lot and there's not a lot going on upstairs. Like, a hotel is my guess.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. So this right here looks like hotel art. This is actually my living room. I can't show you the rest because there are boxes everywhere right now, but It's not the most common podcasting live hit backdrop. I will grant you that, but that right there, that's the state flower of Mississippi. That's a magnolia, my friend. Look at that. How beautiful.
I was actually going to say, I thought it might've been in your parents' house or something like that.
Very well could pass for that. I can't even fault you.
Hey man. So is this what new married life is right now? We're moving in, we're getting boxes done, we're decorating. How's that going?
It's a preview of it. Yeah. So I'm told this is a preview, which is like a sign of things to come. But look, I'll be honest with you, Crate and Barrel is not, you know, a place I'm familiar with historically. And there are boxes taller than I am of Crate and Barrel all around here right now. I don't know what's in them. Got my fingers crossed, hoping for the best. It doesn't look like cash. I don't think there's cash in these boxes. So
there is. It's out the door. Follow up.
Yeah. You're cash to get
you,
this.
My friend. You are good.
All right. Hey, Josh, you came out with your top 20, after spring. So what was the biggest struggle? What was the hardest part of the top 20 putting together that you said this was the hardest decision I had to make?
Explaining to people how irrelevant a post-spring top 20 is. That was by far the hardest. Then the follow-up, the distant second was, okay, what do you do with your Georgias and your Ohio States? The ones that I know perennially recruit top five, if not higher. So they got all kinds of talent loaded up, but it's unproven. And we're not even to fall camp yet, David. So, you know, in fall camp, you start to hear stuff that may make you feel confident about a unit or a guy or a side of the ball that maybe, you know, you didn't even have as much confidence in 3 months ago. And a football game hasn't even happened, by the way, but you're just getting good intel, or maybe you're reading practice reports or whatnot. Well, we're not to that point yet. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, Ohio State basically littered half of the draft with their departing guys. Georgia as well had a lot of guys leave. I'm looking specifically with Georgia because I assume we'll talk about them more. You know, I'm I'm thinking about how they couldn't run the ball to their standard last year. They didn't really even play defense to their standard last year. Do I have confidence that they've glared in on that and honed in on that? I do. But also, I haven't like gotten a proven finished product in my hands that just solidifies it's all fixed. And for all the negatives and all the, you know, faults that people want to throw at Carson Beck, I got no problem with it. Or throw at Mike Bobo, I got no problem with it. There's also this little thing that you need to remember. They were a top 15 passing offense last year, at least. So last year, they could bail themselves out somewhat not being able to run the ball because they did know they could throw the ball. And that's not a slight against Gunnar Stockton. What I'm saying is it's less proven that they can just blanketly lean on being able to do that. So I can say the same thing about Ohio State. So how do you judge those kinds of teams against a team like Penn State, where there's not really a ton of question? The only question is they're all the way up here. Can they just get over the hump? Because they got proven production everywhere. And the one thing they hadn't been able to do is throw the ball in big moments. And they went and got themselves three good receivers out of the portal. But, David, they're not like freshmen that we haven't seen play. We've seen all the guys play. So that is proven production a la Florida State 2 years ago in the portal. FSU went and got a bunch of guys who you had seen play, and we brought them all here to Tallahassee, and now they win the ACC, unlike last year. So I don't know. That's a post-spring kind of view of it. It may be, in fact, it's likely when we get to fall camp, even before week one, I think my opinion would probably change on a few of those teams just based on the intel you're getting from fall camp. But the phone says it's May, so that's how I felt in May.
Well, when you say Georgia specifically, and then I'll let Brent ask the next one. Like, I look at the Georgia roster and I go, where is the position group that is going to dominate?
Yeah.
Like last year I could pick several positions. I could pick a returning quarterback that was elite of elite. I could pick linebackers that were all over the field that were great. A safety that we knew were getting picked in the first round. Like, I could pick that. Like, people get upset and they look at, well, we've been recruiting top-notch talent. Well, where is it going to go? And Georgia dropped more passes, obviously, than anybody in the nation last year while doing all of this. So, like, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, Georgia fans get upset with me, obviously, but I know they get upset with you as well.
Well, it's because despite hailing from Columbus, Georgia, or nearby Harris County, there's just an obvious hatred anytime you point out something negative, which I've always thought was one of the lower hanging fruit styles of rebuttal when someone says something that you may not even necessarily disagree with, you just don't like. You could tell me this living room's a mess. Well, it's not because you're anti-me. It's because this living room's a mess right now. But in football also, because this is a fact that there's garbage all over my living room. It's subjective that so-and-so is the 11th best team in the country in May. But I will say, you know, this time last year, I go back to whatever feel you have on a team this time of year. I remember vividly we did one of these segments in August, I guess it was. And it was when Georgia was the favorite to win it all. They were number one team in the odds board, number one team to win the SEC and win it all. And I'd been around the program a little bit. You talk to people around there, and I didn't feel that emanating from inside the program. Like, I thought internally last year they had more healthy question about themselves than the rest of the world. So I picked them to lose two games. I didn't even think they'd go to Atlanta. So they did lose two games, but the rest of the SEC was down as well. So they go to Atlanta. But my point is, I heard all that last year. How in the world are you picking them to lose two regular season games? Where are those losses going to come from? Well, not only did they happen, could have lost more. Doesn't make them a bad team. It makes them mortal. That's all it makes them. This is probably us falling victim a little bit to applying 5 year ago standards to today's college football. And by the way, I would encourage people who think that's hating on Georgia to listen to the head coach at the University of Georgia, because he's been the one preaching that as loudly and as readily as anyone else. We're not playing the same schedule we were playing in divisional play, and our depth isn't what it was. I did the sit down with him a month ago. He said, I am counting on freshmen. I am counting on freshmen in my 2-deep. He said the days of bringing in a freshman, you not seeing him for 2 or 3 years are gone. We are one injury away from true freshmen starting for us, and that's at Georgia, where they got it as good as anyone depth-wise. So that's where I stand on them.
So it seems parity is or increasing parity and distribution of talent. That's a thing. We know that. So where's the line you think in your top 20? Okay, past this line, I don't think they can win the whole thing. Oh, or is there a line with that?
There is a line normally, but see,
post spring is like, wait a minute, we're not there yet.
Well, because I mean, you look at it, and you when you have a Georgia at 11, or even Ohio State at 8, because typically in the past it feels like, hey, we had a handful, 5 or 6, maybe even less teams that you felt like could win the whole thing. I look at it now, and it's like, okay, I could see that happening. I could see Arizona State going crazy and going off and, you know, having a run, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where's that line, you think?
So there's one unknown. There's one big unknown that makes the season really, really fascinating right now. We don't know, with all the typical dominant programs, Georgia's one of them, Ohio State's one of them, Texas, you can put in that category now. Alabama is in the category. I'm mentioning all these teams that we've classified as teams that can win it all any given year. None of them are proven at quarterback. Now, someone will get it figured out there. But let's just say you got a really crazy year where your best programs, the best they can do at quarterbacks, B to B plus level ball. What that does is it still puts them in the hunt, but it all of a sudden opens the door for what you just said to happen. In a normal world, Arizona State, even at their best, is not winning the title. Last year, it's a solid team. They're not winning a title, though. However, if you don't have a dominant quarterback out there, it probably means you don't have a truly dominant team. And if you just got a field of pretty good to really good, then your field beneath it of potential contenders who have a puncher's chance, Penn State's certainly in there. They may even be at the top already, but they're in there. Arizona State's in there. But you also have the rogue teams that get their act together in the SEC and the Big Ten. Aside from the obvious, Notre Dame's in there. I just don't know what quarterback's going to be. I don't know what it's going to be anywhere. And how in the world am I supposed to know what Gunnar Stockton and Ty Simpson are going to look like this fall? How am I supposed to know what Arch is going to look like? I can guess. How am I supposed to know what Julian Sayin at Ohio State's going to look like if that's who wins the job? I don't know. So it could make for a very atypical November look where you're talking about some teams that you never thought you'd have to take seriously in that championship picture being taken seriously.
See, I feel the same way. I can go there with you. But there's also, Josh, what I've learned over the years now is, like Ohio State, I know they'll figure it out. And they have Jeremiah Smith. So, like, that is not a question mark for me. Alabama, for all the years now, like, and especially obviously with DeBoer now, with his OC back, I think it's even more solidified. I also look at Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams. I know whoever's throwing him the football is going to be great, like in those spots. So, like, do you take that into account too? Is like, I've like Ryan Day is you can say what you want about Ryan Day, what you like, what you don't like about Ryan Day. Quarterback play is always great. Like, you're always going to find him. Do you lean on those things too with some of your predictions with your teams?
Yeah, I well, what you're talking about is program dependability, the blind trust you're willing to put into a guy or his program. I've got it about them. I've got it about Georgia as well. So, you know, if we're talking about Kirby, do I think Kirby's going to fall outside the top 20 in consecutive years defensively? My guess would be no. So I think it's fair to say the same thing about Ryan Day at the quarterback position. I agree with you about DeBoer having Ryan Grubb back. It's really an interesting thing. You're looking at Texas and Alabama, both having lost multi-year starters at the QB position. But if the truth is really known about it, organizationally, it was kind of viewed as time for those guys to move on. You know, good luck, and we'll bring you back here ceremonially forever. However, if you're not going to the NFL, this is probably not the place you're going to play next year. And it's funny how that works, because we're talking about question marks, new starters at those spots, but yet both of those spots prefer the new guy to the guy they had last year.
Yep.
So I would agree with you that, yeah, I think the same way. That's why come fall, and especially come week one, week two, when we finally have results, it's
time. And you've got to pick it.
It's time to pivot on a dime, too. I've always said in college football, you got to take those opinions in the summer and write them in very, very light pencil, because you got to be ready to erase really, really quick once you get results in front of you.
Yeah, it seems like Bama, then you putting them at fourth. You and maybe the intel you've gathered and people you talk to, hey, they're going to be better at quarterback than they were a season ago. Or, and maybe not necessarily better from a talent standpoint, but at least better fit with who it is that Kalen DeBoer wants to be offensively.
Yeah, the reason I put them that high is I do think they'll be good enough at quarterback. Ironically, it's not really about quarterback so much with me. It's what David just said. They may have the best wide receiver room in the league. They have the potential to have that on the high end. But I was over there a couple of times this spring. I watched some scrimmage once, closed scrimmage. I watched and talked to a lot of those guys who were in the building. But the most important part of it is the same stuff we were noticing with Ohio State this time last year, is there's this nucleus of guys who could have tested the NFL waters, probably needed to come back for another year, but they could have been day two guys in the draft, or those same guys had bigger offers to go elsewhere in the portal. And that group of guys stayed, just like they stayed at Ohio State last year. Now, that doesn't guarantee you anything, but what it does guarantee is it guarantees you've got a nucleus of the ones you trust, and then there's a second page to that story, and that is this time last year. What we were talking about with DeBoer is he going to keep his roster together? Because remember that whole, he gets there and their guys are allowed to leave, but Bama can't take anyone in the portal because that's how the rules work. Then they go through spring ball, and I can tell you confidently that staff didn't feel like they could really operate just fully the way they wanted to, implementing their stuff in spring because they knew there was a post-spring portal. And we don't want to chase guys away to the point where our depth is shot and we can't have a year one. Well, now there's been three portal cycles since then. So everybody you've got. Like everyone who's still there wants to be there. And then thirdly, the DB room is incredibly, incredibly upgraded personnel-wise from what they had a year ago. And they weren't terrible a year ago. But you'll remember when Georgia went over there to play them. They get up big on Georgia. But once Georgia started slinging the ball, boom, 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 what's because they had freshmen all over the place. Talented, but freshmen all over the place. So those guys are a year older, but also through no fault of their own, there's some guys over there who started last year who will be pushed for their positions just because they have deeper and better personnel in the room. So if they get pass rush figured out, like if they're a B-level pass rush team, if they can run the ball at a decent level, I think there's some other pieces of that team that can have them right back in the SEC championship picture.
And Ryan Williams is a year older too. Thank God we won't hear he's 17.
Legal adult. Yeah.
Huh?
He's a legal adult.
He's an adult now. We're not gonna get that anymore. All right. One place we really, really agree. There's a lot of places we agree, but like, I'm all in on Clemson. I'm all in because I see the same things in this roster that I saw with Dabo's championship teams. The trio of wide receivers, the quarterback position being solidified. I don't see an offensive line that's a bunch of hammers. That's not who they were. That's not who they were then either. Like, but they're going to survive elsewhere. The defensive linemen that are going to be, you know, a couple first round picks, a corner that's going to be drafted, like a scheme I think that will fit them better with Allen coming in that I think is going to be great. How all in are you on the Tigers? Is this something that just post-spring, it won't be post-spring, it'll probably be post-fall as well?
I can't imagine there's anything that makes me turn the volume down on them. I don't know what's going to – there's not really a lot of unknown. The entire premise of them being as high as they are right now is because we've got a lot of dependability. You got an offensive coordinator, quarterback combo that we've seen a couple of years together now. But you know what? You mentioned something there. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, all three levels of their defense, they got NFL guys. But, you know, that's what you come to expect at Clemson. You're right. They never had dominant offensive line play. So, you know, if they've got plus at that position right now, that's good enough. And they got Matt Luke running that position room, by the way. So there's a proven commodity there. But you mentioned the key. When Clemson was winning, when they were going toe-to-toe back 5 or 6 years ago with the big boys, they had some of the best wide receiver rooms in the country. And since then, the talent level in that room just – fell off, no difference makers. And for the first time, I would say since that 2019 season, maybe even, they've got several guys in that room that can change a game And I'm not asking who their quarterback's going to throw the ball to. I got a guy, Klubnik, okay. He needs to have a big year, but I know him. I've seen him. Came on really strong. I thought he played his best game in the playoff game against Texas. They lost, but I thought he played his best ball in that game. So that's the lasting image in my mind of him. But there are guys in the room they could trust. Those guys came on last year. They're not true freshmen. They came on last year. So I also think there's this other part, David, where you talk about a story in college football. Dabo Swinney's a really proud guy, and he's a really principled guy. And so he's got what he believes in and how he believes a program should run, and he doesn't apologize for it. And even when I've disagreed with him on this or that, I so appreciate that. Just define your principles and values, stand behind it. And you know what? He's not guessing whether it works. He's got a couple of national championship rings and has got a decade of dominance over there that proves it does. But he may have pivoted minorly here or there, but largely he stuck to his guns. And this is the year where if they were to win it all, with every voice outside the four walls of that program yelling at him, he needs to change this and that. If they were to go on a run in the portal NIL era of college football, I don't know if he'd retire. He'd coach 30 more years for all I know. But that would be the moment. If you ever wanted the ultimate ride off into the sunset moment, that would be right on the national championship stage. Confetti's still raining down. You just thank you, good night, and throw that thing and just walk down a tunnel. And that's the last we ever see of Dabo Swinney. That would be basically made for Netflix.
Yeah, Meemaw would support that program, wouldn't they? I mean, the way he does his business. Like,
She would. Meemaw would say, you know, if Hank ever had a program, that's how he would have run it. That's how Hank would have done it. That's what Meemaw would have said about Dabo Swinney.
And I think one thing to consider, too, with Clemson, my son plays with Matt Luke, and just to hear him talk about Braden Smith, like, or Braden Jacobs up front, like, he's already come in, like, that boy was a big, Brandon Jacobs' son from the Giants and Auburn Tigers. He came in enormous, big dude with unbelievable feet, and now he's already trimmed down and the body percent fat's falling, and like, you get a guy up front too that's a mauler, that's a little bit more physical, and they get some physicality up front. Like, and I think they do got to find their running back. Like, it's going to be interesting there, because last year they couldn't run the football. Maffa was dinged up, and they didn't look great. So that's something to look for. But Brent, I'm sure you got a more intelligent question.
With Clemson, that's, and you look at Clemson, and even you look at every team this year, there's a like massive question, and you just brought it up. Who's going to run the ball? Is there going to be too much on Cade Klubnik? Because, by the way, Clemson lost four games last year, including to the school in their own state who also returns their quarterback. So, like, that's what's fascinating about college football this year to me, is just how much every one of these teams, big programs without QB or with QB issues or other programs that don't, and how it all blends together. All right, so Josh, with the rankings, obviously there's pushback either via text from people you know or social media pushback and whatnot, and your audience pushback. Which fan base was giving you the most crap about your rankings? Or is there a consistent top of the list in terms of that?
I would say either Georgia or Ohio State. These are people right now who think it's their birthright to be top five. And honestly, it better not be closer to five. It better be closer to one. What? And so I haven't told this story yet. So I was working local news like 12 or 13 years ago, and we had this newsroom. There was one girl from Michigan State, but there were a bunch of like Auburn and Georgia grads in the newsroom. That's just what the station was made up of. And one Penn State guy randomly. So they did this marketing thing where I think we may have even like sold coverage to some local place or whatever that did like festivals and stuff like that. So it was during the fall. Okay. So we get a bunch of pumpkins, and they painted them up in the different like team color schemes and stuff like that. And so I went to Columbus State University in Columbus, Georgia, not noted for like powerhouse football program. So yeah. I played the Rover. I played like the fill in the blank. I'll hold the rival pumpkin. And so I would pose during a game week with, if it was like Georgia playing LSU, I'd hold the LSU pumpkin. Or if it were like Auburn playing Alabama. All right. So I never knew these photos existed. But our station took all the photos, and apparently they logged one of them, and it was the Alabama-Auburn pumpkin combo. Okay? The other ones don't exist out there, but they do exist. The photos were taken. So some Georgia guy gets a hold of that photo. I haven't seen it since it was taken. And he spreads it all over the place. Hey, this dude's an Alabama guy. Of course he put us number 11. It can't be because there are questions about our run game. It can't be because we fell off defensively. It can't be because we got a question at quarterback. He's a Bama guy. Look, the pumpkin is the proof. I want you guys to remember that. Whenever you get stuck in court, just yell, "The pumpkin is the proof," over and over again. So I didn't respond to it because, honestly, if you tried to type what I just said, it wouldn't sound believable. So I just left it alone. But yeah, the pumpkin pictures, they got thrown in my Twitter DMs a fair amount.
I was like, pumpkin is the proof. That's that print the shirts there. That's
well, what I'm waiting on,
trademark that.
Now is I don't know if the other pictures exist, and I don't know if those are going to get thrown at me one day. Like if I go LSU number one, I know I took a picture with the LSU pumpkin. So I'm trying to wait for that to get thrown out there. It could be like delayed evidence that I don't know exists in court. They've got to show you what they have. It's discovery. I haven't even gone through pumpkin discovery yet.
All right. So what you brought up LSU there, you have them at five, I think fifth is, and we talked, Dave and I talked last week. One of the things I think I know about college football this year is that the pressure in LSU and on Brian Kelly is rather large, and they have a big opening game. So just thoughts on LSU putting them fifth where you did.
Yeah, I think the closer you get to LSU, the more you know what you just said there. I think if you live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you would look at a guy who's won 29 games over his first 3 years, and you would think, wow, Brian Kelly's doing great. He must have universal approval amongst the fan base. But he has approval, but I don't think it's universal. And I think also the way they let that defense fall off and the way they in some ways wasted Jaden Daniels' Heisman year, it really, really sat poorly with those folks. And there's another sublayer to that that you got to get pretty close to Louisiana to understand. LSU has prided itself for a long time in winning with people from Louisiana. And that's both staff and players. When Brian Kelly came in there, he's a proven guy. And so he's hired and he's told, all right, do it your way. Well, his way was to flush a lot of the Louisiana flavor out of that building to bring in his folks. Almost, you know, according to some, almost sort of in a defiant measure, in a defiant tone, getting rid of people that don't even really need to be getting rid of. It's just, I'm here to prove a point. And the point, although these words never came out of his mouth, it was interpreted by many around there as, you think Louisiana is the special sauce here. I'm going to show you the formula to win is the special sauce, and I've got it.
Oh, okay, that's not good. Those people don't like that.
Yeah, if you win out of the gate, you don't really get criticized for that. And they did win in year one. They beat Bama. They go to Atlanta. But then year two, there's the disaster, and it's disastrous with a bunch of defensive guys who can't pronounce Thibodeau to save their lives. So – It's sort of mandated, and this story will get told one day, but it's sort of mandated, hey, you're going to make these changes. And he makes those defensive changes. And we need a guy like Austin Thomas, for example, as the GM. We need him back in here. Well, Austin Thomas comes back in there, and guys, that roster was in trouble this year. And they went and killed it in the portal. Like they made Florida
number
State.
Number one, right?
Yeah, and again, I always want to specify – they did what FSU did 2 years ago. They went and got proven production. They didn't go take kids who were former five stars who weren't starting for good teams and just magically assume, oh, they'll shine for us. So LSU, the one thing about them, and it sounds kind of hypocritical with me talking about proven production, but putting them in the top five, they do have proven production on that team. It's not proven with LSU, and they're going to depend on a lot of those guys, and they've got a front-loaded schedule. Which kind of concerns me somewhat. They play, by my count, they play four losable games, though, in the first six. And so if you don't have your stuff together, if you don't gel as a team and get ready to come out of the gate hot, They are a team that could be really good and have two losses by the time we hit, you know, October, and have no margin for error whatsoever.
You know, they haven't won an opener since 2019.
It's bad. It is a lingering issue. Trust me, that's crazy.
All those people know.
Yeah.
2019, they haven't won an opener. Like, well, that was Joey B was there.
Last year, that was when they lost to USC, which is a great game, but they lost to USC. That's when Kelly did the whole and then the cup comes off. This is a Broyles Award cup. It wasn't that, but the cup comes off the table because he knew that was the one that they were supposed to get to end the curse. And now it's college football's version of like Red Sox Cubs back in the days. Well, everyone knows LSU can't win week one. They can win a national title, but they can't win week one.
All right. So two teams that I look at that I go, okay, I know why he's putting them there, but I know they won't stay there. And that's Oklahoma and Florida. I think both those teams, I think we know are going to be improved from last year. Florida more proved it, I think. Florida proved to us what they could do last year. Oklahoma did not, but the portal changes, the coaching changes, I think we're going to bet on them improving a lot. But I think because of the schedule, for gosh sakes, it's hard to put them any higher, and I don't know that they're going to be at the end of the year in those spots.
Yep. So I didn't pay attention to schedule at all. I know I mentioned LSU's there, but that's me kind of thinking about what they can do record-wise. But when I did these teams, I did it for a reason, because you're right. It'd be like if you and I were down in Georgia, like we're high school track athletes. All right, and you and I just go out on a Saturday against each other, and we run, and we're very comparable. But I know I'm going to go run down in Schley County, and you're going to run in Forsyth. Well, you got a different caliber of competition you're about to face, all due respect to Schley County, than I do. And so how do we judge each other? Do I place myself well behind you in the rankings, just preemptively assuming that I'm going to lose and you're going to win? Or so I don't do it that way. I look at Oklahoma, and honestly, I am returning like a top 15 caliber defense virtually intact with a guy in Brent Venables I trust to squeeze every drop of potential out of it. But that quarterback offensive coordinator combo they brought in, this is not a poverty roster. This is three top 10 classes stacked on top of each other. Really good receiver room there with the Burks kid they got from Purdue last year. They got hurt. He's back. And I think it could be a really, really good team that if it existed in the ACC, you'd be talking about as a rival to Clemson to win the thing. But because they happen to be parked in the SEC with the schedule they have, a lot of people look at them just proactively say, well, they'll lose four games. Hey, what if they do, by the way? What if someone with that schedule loses three or four games by one possession? How am I supposed to judge them? And I feel the same way about Florida. I mean, I've taken a lot of criticism about that with Florida. But with Florida, for whatever people think about Billy Napier, I'll say the same thing about him I've said about Dabo, except Billy doesn't have the rings to back it up, whereas Dabo does. But he believes in his process every bit as much as Dabo does. There's no doubt. I was just down there last week. There is zero doubt when you walk around that building. We know exactly where we're headed. We know exactly what we're doing, why we're doing it. Lagway didn't throw early in spring, but he's healthy. He's ready to go. He'll be ready to go for the fall. So the quarterback question mark's kind of erased. But they're one of the few teams, if you look at them, OD, at their max, that's a team that has top 15 production potential on both sides of the ball. And so it doesn't mean it's going to happen. It means the production is there. The potential is there. So I think that'd be either one of those would be a big story. But I think absent the schedule dynamic there, I think they're going to potentially be really good teams. And I don't treat rankings as, let me just pick you up right where you left off this time last year. I don't think about football like that, because if we look through history, it's hardly ever how it happens. You never have consistent two-year period. I mean, maybe those like Georgia teams and Bama teams, yeah, they used to do that. But college football normally looks like that right there.
Yeah. And so what do you think about college football, man? Like, next year, obviously, we're going to expand, I think, again. You know, what do you think about college football, where it's going, where it ends up? Like, just on a whole, you know, do you like this continuing to expand? I know it's money and it's dollars. It's going to, it's the way it's going to work. But what do you follow on that?
Well, I was never for it to begin with. I knew I was in the minority, but I made my thoughts known even back when we were in the four team and they were expanding. You know, I was of the opinion that I didn't want it originally for the same reasons. I'm not crazy about it now. I'll deal with it. I'm happy to live in the world where we get to cover it for a living. I love it. It's the greatest sport in the world. But the reason I didn't like it, David, is because I knew I had a bunch of friends who wanted the college football playoff to expand simply because they wanted more football or they thought it was a better postseason format than what we had currently. And if you felt that way, I disagreed with you, but I was totally fine with that. Completely fine, just a difference of opinion. We both still love the sport. We both want what's best for it. What I knew was the people who have control of the sport are not expanding it for the same reasons a lot of fans want it to expand. And it just so happened that they had overwhelming public support on their side to make a move for ulterior motives. That's how I saw it. I think they looked at the playoff, and while we saw playoff, they saw an ATM machine that just had a playoff logo attached to it. It's just strapped on the side of it. And that's why you'll notice there was never any talk of expanding just to 6 or expanding to 8. It went straight to 12. And I remember the day the thing got finalized, I went on my show and I said, number one, I told you so. But number two, it's not going to stay at 12. Because why would it? If that's your motivation, why would it stay at 12? And so you get, what, like 5 minutes into the 12-team format, and we got headlines about going to 14 or 16. But it's the reason I get a little upset about it is this is not isolated. You can't talk about the college football playoff without also talking about how big of a mess the NIL portal situation is. It's because the right hand or hands haven't been on the wheel for a while. And in lieu of the right hands being on the steering wheel, the wrong hands find their way onto the wheel. And there's really no limit to how many ditches they can run the car into. And there is no form of entertainment in all of American entertainment culture that is immune to poor decision-making. And I think it'd be very ignorant to just assume football is immune to that. Because I've used this example a million times, but I remember I'm a kid growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s. I remember how massive pro wrestling was at that point. I remember how massive NASCAR was because I'm watching both of them with my dad. Well, dad didn't like pro wrestling all that much, but he was watching NASCAR. But I remember thinking like, man, this is just a license to print money. And then all of a sudden NASCAR said, well, since we've already got these folks, let's pivot our business plan, our business model a little. Let's go put races in Chicago. Let's go after the major markets. Let's take a race out of Darlington every now and then. And so they abandoned their core audience to go after a new audience that couldn't care less about them. Then they tried to come back and they found their core audience said, nah, we're good. Pro wrestling, same thing. So football is a lot more sustainable. It's run the gamut a lot longer than those, but at its core, it is still a form of entertainment. And what has drawn people to, I'll tell you, what's drawn people is a lot more than just the game of football. Because if it was just the game of football, then these UFL games would have massive ratings.
Yeah.
But they don't. So it's a lot more than just the game of football. There's something special about those brands, the mystique, the pageantry. The NFL figured this out. What's special about the National Football League? College football really needs to remember what's special about college football and promote and market that instead of looking to use it. People who aren't responsible for having built it coming along and looking to use it to fatten their own pockets. That's my long-winded college football playoff take, because it's not just about, hey, how many teams do you think should be in the field? It's a much bigger topic that we could go a long time on.
So who's the right hand? You said the right hand steering the ship. What does that look like?
Yeah, I've never thought it needs to be one person because everyone throws Nick Saban around. Well, I've got no problem with that. But I want people who have lived in the game and who have the game's best interest at the forefront of their decision-making. How many people, for example, are willing to say, this is the best idea, but it won't make us the most money. Let's do it. That person I want a lot closer to the driver's seat than right now, because if you'll notice, none of the changes that have happened in college athletics recently have lost anyone money. It always just so happens that the changes that have been made coincide with how much more profitable can we make this or that. One example of the kind of thinking I'm talking about, I'm not going to give you a person, but one of the examples of the kind of thinking that I would like to prevail more often is, you guys, if you've ever been to a Notre Dame game or a Michigan game and you've walked in their stadiums, it's so pristine. There's hardly any ad placement anywhere. And it's not because brands don't want to advertise in Notre Dame Stadium or the Big House. It's because a long time ago they said, this could be a potential revenue stream for us. However, we value the integrity of our aesthetic in our stadium more than we value the ad dollars. So we're going to voluntarily leave that money on the table to enhance what we think is important about the way we present this venue. That is an example of the kind of thinking that I would love to see prevail in college football. Because contrary to popular belief, no one's going broke right now in this sport at the highest levels. You may have to spend more wisely because you have to, you know, pay more people than you used to. No one's going broke right now.
Yeah, you got a lot of money to spend. That's for dang sure. And then they have for a long time. And spending's been going on for a long time. It's just a matter of how much. And so I think getting a hand on this will be interesting to watch. Hey, man, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate your work. One last thing, I got to finish on this. How did the storm chasing start?
So when I was a kid, both my parents worked, so they would drive me to school. I was going to school across the Chattahoochee over in Phenix City, Alabama, because that's where Meemaw lived. And so I would ride the bus to Meemaw's house every day after school. So I would either watch SportsCenter or Weather Channel. That's all I watched. Cartoons, Nickelodeon occasionally, but I largely just watched Weather Channel. So mid-90s comes along. I'm just old enough to, you know, be able to go to the movie theater, and my mom takes me to go see Twister. Ball game. That's it. Once I realized not only did, you know, these things really happen, tornadoes happen in real life, but also there are people who don't run from them. There are people who run towards them and document them and then try and help people who are impacted by them. I don't know, because David, I was scared to ride roller coasters when I grew up. I was scared of everything. But for some reason, the thing that should have scared me the most, I was drawn to. And so I always told myself, if you ever get old enough, you can afford it. You need to, I wrote this down one day in a journal. I wanted to cover college football for a living because that would take up my fall, but it would free me up in the spring to go chase tornadoes. Now that was like a dream scenario. That, you know, your dream scenario, that's not supposed to be able to happen in real life, right? That's what you dream about. We made it happen, man. And so now you just, college football really year round, but especially in the fall, but in the spring, it's so funny because I mentioned it on the show when the show first started to get a little bigger, and I didn't appreciate how many people were watching it. And so I get hit up with these storm chasing teams from the Midwest who said, did we hear you right? Did you say you love storm chasing? Come along and ride with us. So anytime there's an outbreak, just hit them up. Hey guys, you going out? You going? Okay. I'll fly into OKC. I'll fly into Memphis. I'll fly wherever. I'll meet you guys. Let's go do it. So that cannot
be. Oh, we got to know this. Is wifey on board with that? Because this hobby will die quickly if she's not.
So she's on board enough, and I'm going to whisper that. Okay. Let me look over. So she's on board enough.
She's not Helen Hunt.
She's it's the only time I'll ever say that about her. She's no Helen Hunt. That's for sure.
Well, man, keep doing your thing. We enjoy it. I love people that actually just love college football, that watch it, that I don't think have ulterior motives. And I think you're one of those guys, man. So keep doing your thing, and we appreciate you having on, man.
I appreciate you guys having me anytime.
All right. See you, bud.